When can police enter your home without a warrant? Is it easier to gain access if you're not accused of a crime? Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today we will check in on the U.S. Supreme Court. Mike Thompson is our go-to analyst for the court's docket and decisions. Here's what we've got ahead today. Police enter a home to save a man they believe is going to hurt himself. Now, they don't have a warrant or what's commonly known as probable cause. But do they really need probable cause? They aren't looking for evidence of a crime. We will review what the Supreme Court justices asked during oral arguments for a hint at their thought process. Then, when can an intellectually disabled man be saved from execution? What do we need to understand before lawyers make their case before the court? And can you sue the U.S. Postal Office for refusing to give you your mail? Things get complicated in a case of withheld letters and packages. But first, a Kentucky clerk who refused to issue a marriage license to a same-sex couple will not get her day in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll start there today.
The underlying case is Obergefell versus Hodges, which was from 2015, that said same-sex marriage is constitutional. It's constitutionally protected. They based that on the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause. So the right to same-sex marriage is not something that comes out of some, quote, liberal, close quote, reading of the Due Process Clause. This has a foundation in equal protection. Anyway, Kim Davis refused to issue a marriage license to a same-sex couple. She went to jail for it, was held in contempt, sent to jail. She was sued by the couple she refused to give the license to. They obtained a verdict of $360,000 against her. She didn't want to pay it, so then she alleges that she adds this First Amendment claim saying that, no, I've got free exercise of religion, I don't believe in that, so I'm just exercising my First Amendment right in denying them a license. She's been ruled against in all the lower courts, and then she wanted the Supreme Court to look at it. And it received a lot of news because, this court's going to revisit whether same-sex marriage is constitutionally protected. And the court said, no, we're not going to hear it. I think it's significant. The court just delivered its one-line order saying we're denying the request for writ of certiorari. Because in some of these close, contentious cases, the justices who disagree with that will write separate opinions and say, no, sure, I would grant the writ, here's why. And we didn't see any of that. I think if this was a good case to revisit that issue, I think at least Justice Thomas would have written something saying, no, I think we should hear it, because he's a big advocate.
He signaled in the past that this is a topic that he would like to see cases come during the Dobbs decision.
Right.
And this, he didn't say,
no,
I would have, I would have granted this.
Right. Him or Alito or or anyone. I don't think it was a real good case to challenge Obergefell. It's just not close enough factually.
Sure.
And it's going to be difficult, I think, for anybody to challenge that, just because it would be hard to get standing to challenge. I'm not sure how you get injured, have a concrete injury as a result of that same-sex
marriage.
She
was saying, I was fined and I was sent to jail. That was her argument.
Exactly. Yep.
And if that is not standing, it's unlikely that somebody else is going to come up with one.
Yeah, I don't.
Because she was an elected official, which I think is significant.
Right, and she lost. Yeah. She lost the next election. And
yeah. Sometimes the silence speaks volumes from
right,
the court.
Right. Yeah. I think in this case that's very serious. Right. There's a lot of news about it being a reaffirmation of Obergefell. I'm not sure you can go that far either.
Sure.
It's just the court obviously didn't think this, if we're going to look at it again, this wasn't the time or the means to do so.
Meanwhile, they have some other arguments that
yeah,
you've been following.
Yeah.
Let's start with some arguments we heard in October, Case v. Montana.
This is a case involving a search of a home. So some couple of fundamental concepts first. Fourth Amendment requires searches and seizures to be reasonable. General rules, we need a warrant, judicially issued warrant to go into somebody's home or somebody's expectation of privacy. Here, no warrant. officers went into a home. The person's former girlfriend had called and said, "I think he's going to commit suicide. He's also threatened harm to officers who respond." Officers go to the house.
They know him. They know William Case. Yep. They've dealt with him before. He has tried before to provoke them into a confrontation that they believe is his attempt to get them to shoot him because he is suicidal.
Exactly, right.
Now he's in his house and his girlfriend says he needs help.
Yep. And so officers show up. They knock on the door. They yell, "Hey, come to the door." They get no response. They look in the window. They see an empty handgun holster and a notepad, and they think it looks like a suicide note. Then it's not till 40 minutes later they decide to go in. They find him upstairs, and Case ends up getting shot in the stomach out of all that. So he starts a lawsuit against the officer saying that was a constitutional violation. He entered my home without a warrant. And he argues that you need probable cause to believe there's an emergency inside before you can come in.
Mm-hmm.
The court decided a case, Brigham City versus Stewart, earlier, about 10 years ago, 20 years ago maybe, where officers responded to reports of a loud party. They looked in the window. They saw some juveniles drinking, which wouldn't give them cause to enter without a warrant. But one of the juveniles hit another. The guy who got hit, he turned around and spit up a bunch of blood in the sink.
Okay.
So officers went in without a warrant. The court said that was okay. All you needed was, all the officers needed was an objectively reasonable belief that someone inside was in either hurt or in imminent danger of being hurt. So that's
see a kid throwing
standard.
Up blood. We're going in.
Right. Yeah,
that's the standard.
And that's the standard, objective reasonableness, which is the standard the court uses in use of force cases all the time.
So what do the justices say during the arguments? What kind of hints? This is a case that has not been decided yet. We won't hear the opinion until June. What did you notice from their questioning?
Yeah, it looks like, I agree with the news accounts, it looks like and sounds like they're going to side with the state of Montana that the officers were... It was constitutional and reasonable for them to go in without a warrant. The notion of probable cause is a phrase of art in criminal procedure.
Mm.
And the court expressed concern about moving that standard of proof over to non-law enforcement activity, which was entering the home here not for a traditional law enforcement function, but for... the public good, the public safety, the safety of the person inside.
There was no crime. They didn't need a probable cause that a crime had been committed. So that's why in that 40 minutes, because the last time we talked about that, I asked that question. Well, in 40 minutes, could they have not gotten a warrant? The point that I maybe didn't understand fully then was they weren't looking for a warrant because they weren't trying to prove that there was a crime.
Right, right.
They were trying to decide whether they needed to go in to help him. Is their argument
right?
And you're saying the justices seemed sympathetic to that.
They do. Yeah, that's the way it sounds. But you don't know until the opinion comes out. But I don't see how the court's going to switch the standard from what's out there now, the objective reasonableness, to what is arguably a higher standard, which is probable cause. And if they do that, it's going to confuse between officers who are engaged in a non-law enforcement function and officers when they're engaged in a law enforcement function. Because the Brigham case, they were engaged in a law enforcement function. They were there to, I love this saying, the Supreme Court says, a traditional law enforcement function is the ferreting out of crime.
And if they were
you've
ferreting
seen a ferret,
out of crime.
Yeah. So in cases, you could argue they weren't ferreting out crime. They were there to try to prevent some harm.
Case's attorneys were arguing what, though?
Well, they were arguing that
That you needed probable cause. Because they were police officers?
Right.
Okay.
Because they're in the home is so sacred in Fourth Amendment jurisprudence.
Yeah.
That's the most private place.
And that anything they found when they entered could not be used.
Right.
Yeah, because they came in without authorization.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Well, if it was an objectively reasonable entry, they had authorization to go in.
Okay.
So once they're
objectively reasonable versus probable cause.
Right.
The law.
Right. Right. It's wonderful, if you like, words that sometimes go together. Yeah.
Let's talk about Ham and Smith. The facts of this case out of Alabama. Right. Joseph Smith is convicted of capital murder, sentenced to death. And then what happened?
So he's sentenced to death. After Atkins versus Virginia back in 2002, the Supreme Court said you cannot execute a mentally retarded defendant. And the court set up a three-part test to determine whether the defendant was at that level of disability. And the three parts of the test are a significantly sub-average intellectual functioning, significant deficits in adaptive behavior, and a manifestation of these qualities before age of 18. Mm. So that's the three-pronged test. This case deals with the IQ, the significantly sub-average intellectual functioning. So he was given an IQ test, scored a 72, 74, 75, 74, and 78. And this gets into the whole argument about whether we should have the death penalty anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So the district court, the trial court in the federal level, heard all this expert testimony about the IQ and what effect that has on these Atkins factors. And the 11th Circuit, when it got it on appeal, said that, we're going to take this approach and we're going to order that he not be executed. We took a holistic approach. So last year, that decision came up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court vacated the judgment and sent it back to the 11th Circuit, the Court of Appeals on the federal side, saying, we can't tell if you've developed a per se rule that a low IQ means you don't get executed.
Oh.
Or we can't tell if you instead took a more holistic approach and considered all the evidence.
Mm.
Sort of a closet way of saying, did you look at the three factors from Atkins or didn't you? So the 11th Circuit smartly said, oh, we looked at the three factors from Atkins. We took a holistic approach to this. And now the case is back up because Alabama evidently desperately wants to execute him. So it comes back up, and now the court's got to decide, when you've got this multiple IQ tests, what does that do for that first
factor? You can't
factor?
Just throw out the highest and lowest scores. You can't average them.
Right.
You have to look at this holistically. Did they do their job in thinking it through comprehensively?
Yes, that's what the court's got to do.
Mm-hmm.
The higher courts respect district judges greatly because they're the ones who hear everything for the first time. They have to judge the credibility. They watch the people testify. They determine what the facts are. So they're given great deference on an appeal when we're looking at what facts did you find. When the 11th Circuit says we took a holistic approach, there is going to be a lot of respect for the district court's determination of facts, what the IQ is, what the IQ was. The court in the case spends some time talking about when execution does and does not fulfill the goals of deterring somebody from committing a capital offense and retribution, which is the public's desire to see justice done. I think once the 11th Circuit said, hey, we took a holistic approach, I think that saved Smith from execution. I just think there's been so much litigation, and all of it has been done, it appears, correctly. I think the court's going to say you can't execute him.
Okay. Listening for those arguments in December.
Yes.
Let's talk about the post office before we let me go.
Yeah. I really...
Because whether or not you get your mail, and what is the definition? You said words. If you like words, they sometimes go together. Miscarriage versus carriage versus loss versus... Tell us about the United States Postal Service against Conan.
So I'm excited about all these cases, but this one, in our use of force policing classes at USF, we talk about the Federal Tort Claims Act.
Yeah.
So sovereigns, as we've talked about before, are immune from suit. You cannot run around suing the United States of America without its consent. So the Federal Tort Claims Act is the United States' consent to be sued in certain circumstances.
Okay.
Then in the Federal Tort Claims Act, they say, okay, if our employee is acting in the course of his or her employment and commits a wrongful act, you can sue us. Then they go through and there's a whole catalog of exceptions to that waiver. So in the law enforcement context, it's really confusing. In this context, there's an exception for you can't sue for loss, miscarriage, or negligent transmission of mail. So
can't sue the Postal Service for losing your Christmas package.
Right. Loss, miscarriage, or negligent transmission.
Okay.
So there was a case, I think it was 2006, Dolan versus United States Postal Service. In the Dolan case, a woman tripped over a postal package on her doorstep. She was injured, sued the Postal Service for it. And the court allowed the Supreme Court allowed the litigation to continue because it didn't fit within the loss, miscarriage, or negligent transmission exception.
I don't know. Hazardous delivery wasn't in the exceptions. Okay.
Right, right. And so the reason this case is up here is because there's a Federal Circuit Court of Appeals split.
I love those. Those are so
interesting. What the exception means. So in this case, the Fifth Circuit in the Conan case, and Conan, the thing that's a little freaky is she alleges an intentional act on the part of the Postal Service. Her allegation is these postal workers intentionally refused to deliver her mail because of her race. And
she's a landlord, and they won't deliver any of her tenants' mail either. That causes her to lose tenants and have to, you know, do all these administration filings.
Right.
And she's upset.
Yeah. And who wouldn't be, really, if you can't get your mail, if those facts are true? So, that's her argument. Some circuits are saying the intentional wrongdoing is covered in the exception. So you can't sue the United States for intentional wrongdoing. The other circuits say, you can because it's not covered by negligent transmission. So it's going to be it'll be interesting to see what the court does.
I love this argument. We didn't miscarry your mail. We just didn't give it to you.
Well,
we threw it in a puddle. We just refused to give it to you.
The Fifth Circuit said that's the circuit whose opinion is being considered here. The Fifth Circuit says, you can't have miscarriage without carriage. Here we had no
love that part.
I know. Here we had no carriage.
There's no carriage.
We had no carriage. And there's no transmission, then there's no loss because you just didn't deliver it.
And her attorneys are saying, come on now.
Right.
What am I supposed to do?
Right. Yeah, I get to sue. I want to sue the United States.
I've tried everything else. What else am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this, I think this might end up being much ado about nothing, to use a cliche, because this litigation's in its infancy. So the courts have just dismissed her complaint, which is her initial filing. There's been no evidence taken or anything. Because the first paragraph of the Federal Tort Claims Act says that you can sue us only if our United States employee was acting in the course of his employment. An intentional wrongdoing might take that person out of his course of employment, which would make the United States still immune.
So we don't even know the facts. I want to go back to what you said. We don't even know the facts of the case yet, so we don't know.
All we know are her allegations.
Because she's just trying
complaint.
To figure out whether or not she can, in fact, sue the government.
Right. And she's filed her complaint saying, hey, this is my lawsuit, and here's why I need relief.
Okay.
And the government files a motion to dismiss saying she hasn't stated a claim.
So we wait for June to find out, and then she would proceed.
Right.
Okay.
I think this one's going to be done.
I guess, what is the question before the court?
The question before the court is whether intentional wrongdoing is covered by the exception. So if intentional wrongdoing is covered by the exception, the United States remains immune.
Mm.
I don't think they're going to go that way because the Dolan case said that negligent transmission, Mail is lost if it's destroyed or misplaced, and miscarried if it goes to the wrong address. Since both terms, I'm quoting from the Dolan case now, since both terms refer to failings in the postal obligation to deliver mail in a timely manner to the right address, it would be odd if negligent transmission swept far more broadly. So I think her lawsuit's going to be allowed to proceed.
Okay.
And I think we'll hear about this one before June, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Interesting.
Yeah. It is interesting.
Right. They have agreed to hear a challenge to grace periods for mail-in ballots.
Yes, I saw that.
There are other things they have started to agree to hear or disinclined to hear.
Yeah.
And we continue to watch. Meanwhile, they have this ongoing constant job of responding to the news of the day and the challenges of the day during a government shutdown.
Right. All these emergency requests for action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lots going on in the courts. Mike Thompson, thank you so much for keeping us updated on some things we might have missed.
Thank you.
You've been listening to U.S. Supreme Court Analysis from Professor Mike Thompson. He's with the University of Sioux Falls. It's all part of our mission here at Public Radio to offer education and civil conversation right here in South Dakota. And that is the conversation for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.